Suns can do a little celebrating with a W here. In it goes to Bledsoe. 5 seconds. Bledsoe with three. Bledsoe with one. Got to put it up for the game. Good! He did it! Eric Bledsoe at the buzzer.
The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
Not what you would expect, but the opposite, the polar opposite of stat padding. It seems like whether or not you're talking about the Suns trying to give Devin Booker extra possessions to make sure he can score his 70, or you're talking about the Suns trying to make sure that another player doesn't get their triple-double. Either way, this team is really exciting to watch right now.
Oh, I love it. And last night, or Friday night, playing against Russell Westbrook and trying to keep him from making history, it was basically what Earl Watson said in Boston. If you don't like it, do something about it. Well, the Suns did something about it against Russell Westbrook. They prevented him from getting a triple-double to pass Oscar Robertson because they took offense to the crowd chanting for Russ. And people will say, well, you know, why were Suns fans chanting for Russell Westbrook? Or, you know, compare it to Boston fans chanting for Devin Booker. Let's make this very, very clear up front on this episode. Those were not Suns fans. The game did not sell out because of Suns fans. Because Suns fans aren't selling out Suns games right now. These were bandwagon fans or casual NBA fans looking to see history. And that's why they were there. And that's why they were so loud for Russ. This wasn't as if the hometown crowd turned on the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, Coach Watson said that exact same thing, actually, in even more biting tones than you just used, Greg. When Tim McMahon of ESPN asked him about Suns fans in Suns jerseys cheering for Russ and Watson, I could post the video a little bit later, but basically Watson reacted with, those were not Suns fans. Suns fans were not at this game. This is a great time of year to get away from OKC because it's so cold out there. Don't even try to tell me those were Suns fans. That's your rhetoric, not mine.
Yeah, they're the same guys that used to come to games in Kobe jerseys, and then they'd show up in, KD jerseys. They're the guys that just whatever big star is in town, they'll throw that jersey on. They'll come out and root for them. They're not guys that root for Suns, but they will be the guys 2 years from now when Devin Booker is officially, quote-unquote, a star in this league, that show up to Suns games and act like they've been on the bandwagon the whole time.
Why that?
Yeah, one of our buddies on Twitter, Brian Giberman, he's been taking a break from social media lately, but he's one of the more sobering critics of everything, including his favorite Knicks, but even Suns locally. And even this morning, he was earlier this morning, which is probably late night for him and early morning for us, because we're recording this at like 7 a.m. on a Saturday. He was saying Devin Booker's still not a star because all he does is shoot the ball. But yet, I looked it up, and Booker is like one of only he has the third most 5-plus assist games before age 21 among non-point guards. And so, I mean, Booker does have more to his game than just scoring, but right now he's just a sieve on defense, and so his critics are all over him on that. But back to the game last night, Booker, man, he really took it to heart, listening to those fans cheering every Westbrook move and only tepidly cheering the Suns' moves. The Suns were up 20 in the first half. They finished the first half up 21. They finished the third quarter up 23. They had the best game. They haven't won in a month, and yet the fans were cheering Westbrook on his potential assists and booing the Thunder players whenever they didn't take a shot off of Westbrook pass, and even booing the Suns for fouling the Thunder players so Westbrook couldn't get an assist. And that's what you were saying earlier, Greg, is Watson was saying, hey, look, if you don't want Devin to score 20, do something about it. Well, the Suns did something about not wanting Russell Westbrook to get that record against the Phoenix Suns franchise.
How do we feel about that, though? Looking at it from a basketball purist standpoint,
I don't have a problem with it at all. Why shouldn't you? I mean, the Suns get killed.
Tim, what are you asking? How do we feel about the Suns denying a triple-double on their home court? Or what are you asking how we feel about?
The way that they were denying it, with the intentional fouling so that Russell Westbrook couldn't get the assists and that kind of thing.
There was only a couple of those. There was only a couple of intentional fouls. Basically, the Suns just decided they were going to guard everybody but Russ, and Russ refused to shoot. So Russ was hunting his own assists. He denied it after the game, but he was hunting his own triple-double, and the Suns were just doing something about not letting him have it. Russ could have scored 40, and he didn't feel like it.
Yeah, why should you have an issue, no matter how you go about it, from stopping a guy trying to embarrass you on your home court? In this case, when they're basically saying, take any shot you want, and he's trying to get that assist, I have no problem with them doing this. And I'm getting sick of purists, basically, no matter what the Suns do right now, they're getting crap for it online and in media, because they're trying to build a culture and trying to basically say, we're not going to, you know, we don't care what other people think, and we're not going to all of this personally last night. I have absolutely no problem with it at all.
And you are listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at Sun Solar Panel. You can follow us individually at Espo at Dave King NBA and at myself at Radio Tim NBA. And the one thing that we'd like to do every single week, because there's nothing that is more important that you guys can do for us than leave us a 5-star or a 4-star review on iTunes. And we're going to read one. This week, we have one from 40 Before 5, the title of the review, and it's a 5-star. It says, great podcast for a lifelong Suns fan. Quote, just recently stumbled upon this audio. Gold makes work better, makes commutes better, and it makes this horrible season better. Not to mention all three guys have good chemistry and can keep things light. Do your ear holes a favor and give it a go.
I threw this out on Twitter, but I want to throw out here on the podcast. I have quite the Suns prize closet. After years of working with the team, I got all sorts of free stuff that I don't have room for it in the home. I got a clear space. So if you guys leave a 5-star review and you tweet a screenshot proving that you left the review and that you have subscribed to the podcast, I'm going to open that prize closet. And this review is the first one that gets a prize. I got a draft hat, brand new, from the Devin Booker draft that you're going to get for this one. So we appreciate it. And from time to time, you're going to get rewarded. And there's some good stuff in said prize closet. There's jerseys. There's actually, if we get to, let's say, 100 reviews, I got a pair of 92-93 game-worn authentic shorts that we may even throw in the mix.
Oh, how short are those shorts? Jeez.
Oh, they're short. They're short. they put the nut in Nut Hugger. All right, that's what they are.
So those are on discount because they're so small.
Yeah, they are 20% off.
We are PHX.
You're listening to the Solar Panel of Phoenix Suns podcast. Greg Esposito, Dave King, Tim Tompkins. Taking a look at the tank, Craig, the Suns, with their win over OKC, broke a 13-game losing streak, now putting them, about two games ahead in the loss column, depending on how you look at it, and a game back in the win column from the Los Angeles Lakers. Phoenix Suns right now looking like they have the number 2 overall pick if those ping pong balls work out in their favor. The question to you guys is this season a failure if the Suns do not get that number 2 overall pick?
Well, first off, can we cue the Randy Newman, the I Love LA, because the Lakers bailed our backsides out on Friday night by winning. I thought the Suns had managed to screw up the tank by winning a game against OKC that they probably should have lost. Instead, the Lakers come out and they beat the Kings by 4 points in a game they trailed a lot. So Thank you to the LA Lakers, something I never thought I'd publicly say, but thank you for that. And
Tyler Ennis is providing returns for the Phoenix Suns after all these years.
Yeah, thank you. We raise a glass and we salute you, LA, because you're helping the tanking efforts here in Phoenix. But yeah, I think this is a failure if you don't wind up with a top two pick. Now, you're doing everything in your power right now to make that happen. So if the ping pong balls don't go your way, that's a little bit more palatable than, say, if the Suns wound up winning the last two games and falling out of that number two position and wound up with a fourth or fifth pick. If that's the case, this is a failure of a season, because basically you had one job, and that was to lose enough games to put you in position to get one of the final pieces, young pieces, and a potential superstar to go along with Devin Booker. If you don't accomplish that, suffering through another abysmal season where you likely have 59 losses, tied for the second most in franchise history, and you don't walk away with one of those top picks and a superstar, yes, it's an abysmal failure of a season.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go that far. I mean, we got two games left. We have two games left, one on Sunday and one on Tuesday. The Suns just capped off a 13-game losing streak to barely not set a new franchise record for consecutive home losses, to barely not set a new franchise record for consecutive losses overall. I think the Suns have done everything they can. Their management has done everything they can to lose as many games as possible. The Suns will barely not lose 60 this year for the first time since their inaugural season, and yet they have positioned themselves to be solidly into the number two overall potential lotto ball slot. Seems like to me the worst that can happen is they might share with the Lakers, but of course, you know, worse things could happen, but it feels like karma is running this way right now, that the Suns are going to have the second most lotto balls on lotto night. Now, if the lotto balls don't go the Suns' way, we can't control that. The other thing to look at is there are four really good players at the top of the draft, ready-made players that everybody knows, and another handful of guys who have potentially have more, higher upside than the top four, or one or two of the top four anyway, in this draft. So I really think that, you know, you have just as many fans who want the Suns to trade down and take two in the 6-10 range rather than one in the top two or three range. I am in that latter camp. I'd rather have the one in the top two or three range. But either way, the Suns have won this season. They need to really start building a team now. That's the big thing, and not just building assets.
So I haven't seen that online anywhere. Obviously, you, Dave, and US are a bit more tuned in to the Suns fan community than I am. That being said, I haven't really seen a lot of people saying that the Suns should trade down to take two picks in the top 10.
I posted a top 10 mock draft with another guy yesterday.
I read
and
that.
It seemed like the more comments than I had expected were about the maybe the Suns should go after a combo of Jonathan Isaac and the French point guard. I still can't say his name out loud. Not that he's Voldemort or anything like that. It's just a weird name to say. Nikhil Atina or something like that. Anyway, a few fans would like to have a pair of those guys rather than Alonzo Ball, who may not pan out, or a Markel Fultz, who may just become a score first point guard who doesn't pass. I mean, you know, you've got people. These are self-flagellating fans. I mean, we've had a really bad run here, and so everyone is expecting the worst. But I think the Suns have enough volume of young talent. They need one more star to go along with Devin Booker.
Look, I think the ideal situation for me at this point is you wind up with one, the Lakers wind up with three, and since Lonzo Ball and his dad can't shut the hell up, and they're making it very clear that his preferred destination, no matter what, is LA, I think you swap one for three and maybe a D'Angelo Russell, and there's probably filler in there, and you get a top talent and you get another young proven guy, and maybe you get the best of both worlds. You get that young point guard who can start, and you get that young forward that that you're looking at in the top three or four there, and something interesting can happen. I'm not opposed to trading down at all, because I don't think there's a LeBron in this draft that's a surefire superstar. And when one of the guys that's probably closest to that is already making a lot of noise, I'd start looking at those options at what you can do. But if you get number one, you have all sorts of leverage that the Suns have never had before, whether it's in trades or actually in making the picks. So that's the key, is they need to land one of those top two picks, and then they can try to figure out what's the market for these picks. Can we truly make something happen? Because who knows, maybe Philly is sitting there with two quality lottery picks, and they're a team that you can look at and try to leverage some picks out of and build that team. Because you're right, Dave, the Suns are at a point where you need to figure out what's the team. There's enough assets already, but we've seen that just accumulating assets doesn't make you a winner. At some point, you have to figure out, how do these puzzle pieces fit together, which ones don't belong, and put it all together. Suns have to move into that phase this summer.
Yeah, you know, I've considered that same scenario where the Suns, if they end up with a higher pick, they trade with the Lakers so Lonzo Ball can go to L.A. I'm all for that. I really don't want the spectacle that is LaVar Ball in this market. I'm not excited about that. And I'm totally sure I'll be proven wrong, but I really don't think Lonzo Ball has the greatest future of any draft pick in this draft. I think there are other guys who have better futures. I do admit that maybe I'm going a little safe with my request for the Suns to draft Josh Jackson. I think Jackson might not be a superstar, but I think Jackson, if you like a Jimmy Butler type, if you like a Paul George type, I think that's what Josh Jackson's going to end up being. What I really like about him is he's very vocal. He's active on the court. And the Suns need an outgoing, aggressive personality out on that court. You have so many quiet guys on the team. Devin Booker is your loudest guy, that's probably a personality issue where you need some fire on that team. And I think they missed PJ Tucker since the trade. So I really like a Josh Jackson fitting in with the Suns. So I could do that trade. My hesitance is when you mentioned D'Angelo Russell. I loved D'Angelo Russell a year ago. I thought he was going to be really great. He's been very disappointing as a pro so far to me. And now they're talking about making him a two guard. And when you got a 6'4 guy who only can shoot jumpers and he's just a two guard, I mean, I wasn't a fan of Buddy Hield. And now we're talking about a Russell Westbrook, or excuse me, not Russell Westbrook, D'Angelo Russell, who might just be, you don't want him to turn out to be a poor man's Buddy Hield. So if you really want that point guard, I think you got to go for that. But I'd be a fan of the Suns keeping Bledsoe and having Josh Jackson as their small forward of the future.
Is there any indication that the Lakers want Lonzo Ball?
I don't think we've heard any indication of what the Lakers want, and that's probably a byproduct of the fact that a month ago they blew out their entire front office and put in a new regime that includes Magic Johnson and a guy who was an agent before ever sitting in the GM chair. So I'm not sure they know what they want yet, but a homegrown guy that wants to be there and has the makings of the perfect kind of LA star, that swagger and won't shut the hell up. Yeah, I think they might want him and LeVar as part of their family. The thing I'm wondering is, it feels like to me, from everything we're hearing in local media here and rumblings, that the Suns may just be ready to move on from Eric Bledsoe. And does that mean that they're committing to, no matter where their spot is, looking long and hard at a point guard rather than a Josh Jackson? Because I as much as I hate it, as much as I don't necessarily think it's the right thing, I feel like the Suns are seriously ready to just move on from Eric Bledsoe and cash in at the apex of what they're going to be able to get for Bledsoe.
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of that, of course. I really think I think the Suns just need to add more playmakers around Bledsoe, more guys who can pass Josh Jackson can pass. He's considered one of the better playmakers of the small forwards. So if you get like a guy who can do five or six or four or five assists from the small forward position, Devin Booker continues to grow, and he averages four or five assists from the shooting guard position. I think Eric Bledsoe is a great guy to have because he profiled coming into the season anyway as a defense first, offense second, passing third kind of point guard. That's the kind of guy you need next to a Devin Booker, and you can sandwich with a Josh Jackson and cover for Devin Booker's mistakes. If Bledsoe has just simply turned himself into an offense-only point guard and won't play defense again in his career, then, yeah, maybe you move on. Because, as Zach Lowe put it a few weeks ago, there's a lot of guys who can throw up six assists, and if you give them enough shots, they'll get 20 points and they don't play any defense. Where Bledsoe really makes a mark is where he can play defense, and he's done that up until this past year. He didn't do that this year, and I don't know if that was because he was just feeling out his offense and it was such a bad team, or if he's covering for his knees. And, you know, that would be the big reason to trade Bledsoe, is do it before he starts totally disintegrating on the knees. But if you think he's going to end up being healthy for at least two or three years, then I'd say keep it.
Well, that's a great point, though. If there's any training staff that would be able to sit there and predict when you should deal a guy based on when his health is likely to give out, it's the Suns training staff. So if they're seriously in the mode of it's time to move on from Eric Bledsoe, you have to wonder if that's part of the reason why. Because having firsthand seen the way that they monitor these guys and the technology that they use, it's insane. They track so many different things and can predict so many different things that if the Suns decide to move on, I have a sneaking suspicion that is a very large reason why. And we may see another one of those Amari Stoudemire situations where Eric Bledsoe has one really good year after he leaves the Suns, and then the wheels completely fall off based on the way they're seeing health. That could very easily be why they may feel a somewhat motivation to move Eric Bledsoe right now and move on to the future at the point guard position.
Well, that, and it's a really good year to draft a point guard. I mean, even if you're just taking a look at the upcoming point guard free agent class, unrestricted point guards, here's your options. Aaron Brooks, Jose Calderon, Ian Clark, Norris Cole, Darren Collison, Steph Curry. Obviously, that's not an option. Ennis Tyler, Raymond Felton, Drew Holiday, George Hill, he's probably not going anywhere. Brandon Jennings, Ty Lawson, Sean Livingston, Kyle Lowry, he's not going anywhere. Shelvin Mack, Patty Mills, Chris Paul, Ronnie Price, Sergio Rodriguez, Derrick Rose, Jeff Teague. Yeah. Jason Terry, if you consider him a point guard, it doesn't really matter. Suns aren't getting him. And Darren Williams. I mean, it's a really, you know, any of the good point guards are either too old, so, or they're, you know, Eric Bledsoe's age, or they aren't going anywhere. So this is a really good year to draft a point guard.
Plus, there's a lot of really good point guards in the draft.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the teams, let's go down the Eric Bledsoe road a little bit since we brought it up. There's a rumor locally by John Gambadoro over at Arizona Sports that the Mavs, the Knicks, and the Bulls all have interest in Eric Bledsoe. Now, looking at those three teams, outside of obviously Jimmy Butler, what is it that you'd actually want? What's a fair price if they're seriously going to go down this Eric Bledsoe road? What is potentially a fair price to get back for this guy?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm just trying to look up draft picks right now.
Like with the Knicks, you'd have to get their first-round draft pick this year. You'd have to, and then there'd have to be something else included. That's the only way, because obviously you're not getting a Porzingis back, and that's the only other real asset that they have. So you'd have to get their lottery pick back.
I don't think they're going to give up the sixth pick in the draft in this draft for Eric Bledsoe. I really think they're not that smart, but if they're smart, they would build around Porzingis and have a younger guy. You don't want a 28-year-old Bledsoe. You already gambled on Derrick Rose this past year, and that didn't work out. So I don't think the Knicks are going to do anything like that. I mean, they'll try to do something lesser for Bledsoe, and I don't think the Suns would go for it. If you're looking at the Bulls, you know, that might be a more attainable pick. Where the heck is their pick? Around 16 or so right about now. That might be a more attainable pick for Bledsoe, and then you could grab someone like a really high upside Justin Patton from Creighton and potentially have your defense-oriented center for the future. You could get a small forward like Anunoby from Indiana. You could get someone like that in the middle of the first round. I don't think anyone's going to give up a top 7-8 pick for Bledsoe this year. But heck, if they do, why not? Go for it. But I just don't know. The Mavs, they have the 9th pick or so, somewhere around there. So that might be a place on the cusp of getting a package back for Bledsoe. I just don't see the Knicks going all the way with their number 6 pick.
I tend to agree. But if you're Ryan McDonough, I think that's your starting point with them. It's, you know, we want that pick, and if we're not going to talk about that, we're moving on to somebody else. Like, you need to get value back. If you just dump Eric Bledsoe, that's a big problem. You got to get value back, and at some point, it's either proven talent that's young or it's a high draft pick, and that's, I wouldn't settle for much less.
From a Mavs perspective, and from a Suns perspective, if you could get a this year's pick plus a Nerlens Noel from the Mavs. Not recently.
I'd be for that. You solve two things. You add more depth in the draft, and you get a young center. Yeah. Although, isn't Nerlens a restricted free agent, which would complicate that?
He is. Yes.
Yeah, he can't actually do that. He's, and plus, why would the Mavericks? Nerlens Noel is also an injury problem.
He is
waiting to happen. But why would the Mavericks give up on him when they gave up so little to get him? And he could end up being a centerpiece for the future. I don't think the Mavericks would trade away Noel for just another middle-aged guy.
Well, it depends on where Mark Cuban's head is, though. If he thinks we've got to give Dirk one last final great run, and he's willing to sacrifice the future and the beginnings of that rebuild to do that, it wouldn't surprise me if they make some desperate moves.
Do then. Let's do that. Let's just go all out and do Brandon Knight and Tyson Chandler and Eric Bledsoe all for the number 9 pick in the draft. How about that?
Well, I don't think their salary cap would allow it, but I'd be all for it. Yeah. I'd sell Brandon Knight for a 2043 second round pick. Like, I don't care what you get on that at this point.
That's right.
We have a mailbag question about it, but I guess we could just talk about it right here. Is how can the Suns get rid of that Brandon Knight contract? Is there a viable way apart from giving up an asset or doing some sort of stretch provision? I don't even know if you can do a stretch provision on a contract that long, though.
Oh, you can. It would be a 7-year stretch at this point because he's got 3 years left on that contract. So you could either just eat it all in 3 years, $15 million per, and then just not be able to max your cap out, which is actually doable for the Suns because they aren't going to spend money on players anyway for the next year or two. But you could also stretch it out for over 7 years, double the life of the remaining years plus one. But, man, that's worse than the Michael. By the way, they're also still eating Michael Beasley's contract this year at $750,000 on the salary cap. Do we really want to talk about Brandon Knight over the next 7 years being a drain on the salary cap?
At that point, it's not a stretch provision. It's a groin pull provision because you can't physically stretch that far. Like, no, you don't want that reminder constantly of how crappy the Brandon Knight contract extension is. You know, I'm not even going to say the trade at this point. The contract extension is the bigger issue with him. You have to find somebody that's willing to take him, even if it means you have to take somebody else's garbage contract in return and hope a change of scenery for that person is better or eat that money. You don't want the reminder of Brandon Knight.
How bad of a contract does it have to be to take back? I'm like, in order to get rid of Brandon Knight, to me, you're going to have to take on a a contract that's equally as bad. And I guess to your point, Espo, you just got to hope that it's you know, would you take the Chandler Parsons contract back at this point?
I'd consider, because you might be able to get Chandler Parsons to turn it around. That's a guy, change of scenery might actually help, and our training staff in Phoenix could
he's entirely physical. That's his problem, is the physical part with Chandler Parsons. Of course, he's not that great a player, but he was good enough to earn max contracts the last two times he's been a free agent. So he's something along that lines is something you would have to consider if you're trying to get rid of Brandon Knight right now. But really, it doesn't have to be the worst contract ever. It just needs to be a bad contract.
What about the Joakim Noah contract? Would you guys take that for Brandon Knight?
Who'd you say?
Joakim Noah. 4 years, $70 million.
You've already got Tyson Chandler on the team.
I know. That's what I'm saying. You're going to have to take a real bad contract back to get rid of Knight.
I have a rule that no matter how bad the contract, you don't take a man bun back as part of the deal. It's just it's how I feel. It's where I stand. So we can't let that part happen. That's the only reason I'd stand in the way of that. I'm starting to think we might have to trade part of the Suns dance team along with Brandon Knight in order to get rid of that contract. We might have to sweeten the deal that much.
Well, let's not go down that road, Greg. Come on.
I'm just saying, some teams, have you seen some teams say the Milwaukee Bucks? They don't exactly have the talent pool to bring a great dance team to the court night in, night out. So we might have to help ship them some talent. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I lived in Milwaukee. I can say this.
You're listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Radio. You can find us on social at Sun Solar Panel, whether that be Twitter or Facebook. Taking a look at the MVP of the week. To me, this has to go, and I'm not sure. I actually want to ask you guys, I'm not sure who makes this decision right here, whether it's Ryan McDonough, whether it is Earl Watson, but bringing Dragan Bender back for the last week of the season, a lot of people didn't think was a good idea. I think it's a great way to motivate him going into the summer, going into the offseason, to feel like part of the team instead of just watching from the sidelines. And to me, whoever made that decision to bring him back should be the MVP of the week.
Well, as we've heard from Earl Watson, I'm guessing everything's a management decision right now. So I think management is getting your MVP vote this week.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually go with the player instead, besides Dragan Bender, and let's see. I'm just gonna have to call it out as Alan Williams, and the guy won the Dan Majerle Hustle Award this week for being the most spirited guy on the team, and there really wasn't another guy who really could be the Hustle Award winner for this Phoenix Suns this year after PJ Tucker was traded. But I thought it was really funny because Alan Williams has been a Suns fan his entire life. He's followed the Suns, but he is too young to even know really who Dan Majerle is as far as being a Phoenix Sun. And so he didn't really know much about the award other than it was pretty cool to get. And it's a weirdly shaped, weird circular silver thing. And so he's like, hey, yeah, cool. It was funny having an exchange between him and Jarrell Eddy. Jarrell Eddy looks over at the award, which is basically half as tall as Alan Williams himself when he's sitting in a chair. And he's like, what's that? And Alan Williams is like, it's the Majerle Hustle Award. Who's Dan Majerle? Well, he's this guy who plays for the Suns. Well, that's pretty cool, man. That's a cool award. He's just got nothing.
Alan Williams was two when Dan Majerle was traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers, all right? If you want to feel old, he was eight when Majerle came back for his last season in the NBA with the Suns. That makes me feel really old. My MVP of the week is Devin Booker's cojones, because this guy, every time somebody pisses him off, he comes up huge, and I'm loving it. And I recanted a few weeks ago on my thought that Devin Booker is probably a 1B and not a 1A for a team. I think Devin Booker is on the path to being a superstar. He's walking the walk. He's talking the talk. He's getting it done now. And I love watching this this emerge in front of us. We're seeing something we've never seen in Phoenix, a group of guys with a true attitude. It's no longer nice guys trying to play fun. It's hard nosed. There's an edge to it, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, let me just throw down a list of a couple of things that Devin Booker has accomplished. Now, last year we talked about teenage this and teenage that. This year it's age 20 this and age 20 that. He's got a lot of stuff that he has done, a lot of scoring that he has done for a guy under 21. I think people are getting a little tired of hearing it, but I mean, he among guards ever in NBA history, he is the top scorer ever among guards before age 21. He's the fifth leading scorer ever at any position under the age of 21. He's got the third most ever 30-plus point games before the age of 21. He's got the fifth most ever 20-plus point games. And he only needs two more to pass Wiggins to go into fourth. He's also got the fourth most 30-5 games, with five being the assists in NBA history for somebody under 21. And so let's just stop talking about age for a second. Let's just start talking about Devin Booker, the scorer. In the 2016-17 season, among players of any age at all, Devin Booker has the most 27-plus point quarters at four, and he's got the most 20-plus point quarters overall at six this year. And that puts him past Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry last night when he had his 21-point quarter. And that's a franchise record. Of 49-year franchise record, scoring 21 straight points in that quarter. I think Devin Booker of any age is a heck of a scorer. I think Devin Booker under 21 is one of the best in NBA history. So I think we need to recognize real here. I think he is going to be a very, very good player. And those who think he's only a scorer, he has the third most assists by a non-point guard ever before the age of 21, a third most five-plus game assist games for somebody under 21 for a non-point guard ever, behind only LeBron James and then this guy, Tyreke Evans, who won Rookie of the Year before he started calling himself a point guard going forward and not really fitting that bill.
Did 59-year-old Dave King really just drop a real, recognized real reference on the solar panel? Mark it down.
Sure, I screwed it up too, but I tried.
But mark it down. That phrase is now jump the shark. It is over. Nobody else use it.
Everything I say is over. I am 40 years old. I have nothing that's pop culture right now in my world. So
all right, I got to call you out on something though, Dave. On this Devin Booker thing. And it's not any of the stats you went through. Totally agree with you. We're seeing a guy of the likes that we've never seen with the Phoenix Suns before. But last night, the Brightside Twitter account tweeted, and I quote, "Drop your best Devin Booker nicknames."
That all wasn't. Right?
I know it wasn't you, but you're the proprietor of said organization. And can we quash this? We talked about this last week on the show while you were gone, but we don't need any of these. And I'm the king of crappy nicknames. We went over that as well. Devin Booker doesn't need some forced nickname. Can we stop trying to perpetrate that on the internet? He doesn't need one.
Names that are shorter versions of the person's real name, Espo. So of course
I did not give myself that. Some radio host when I was interning at 18 gave me that, and it stuck, unfortunately, and everybody calls me it now.
Well, and now Devin Booker is 18, 19, 20 years old, and he's going to get something. But definitely. I'm okay with not giving anybody nicknames. I don't call anybody nicknames. I mean, I'm lucky to even call you Espo, but half the time I do call you Greg, just because I'm not a nickname person. But, you know, it seems like everybody's got a nickname for everybody, and even Russell Westbrook, they're starting to call him the Problem this year, and I think that's a little bit better than just coming up KD, whatever, you know, 35, whatever, you know. I don't like any of those nicknames either. But if you can come up with a really cool nickname that sticks, why not?
Worse. Fine. If we're going to go that route, let's just call him the Historian, since that's all he's doing is making history. I know. All of them are terrible. All of them are. People want to call him the Librarian, for Christ's sake. They're all bad. That's the point of this. There are no good nicknames for him.
What about PG-13? Okay. Is PG-13 the worst nickname in the NBA?
And he changed his number because Bill Simmons pushed it for years, and he finally decided, you know what, yeah, I'll change my number. I'll be PG-13.
So, yeah, that's terrible. I was going to say something about PG-13 versus R-rated, but there's nothing that came to mind.
I got to ask you a question, Dave. So April 1st, I am on Bright Side of the Sun, and I read an article, and the Phoenix Suns are going to scrimmage whoever the loser of the Final Four is. And God damn it, I get so excited, and I tweet it out. And then as soon as I send the tweet, I looked at the date, and I'm like, I better take that tweet down. Whose grand scheme of an April Fool's joke was that? Because I feel like hopping on Suns Reddit, a lot of people bought it.
Yeah, no, that's funny. I did go a couple of hours before putting in the catch at the end saying April Fool's outright. I figured I wanted to have people, you know, stew over for a little bit. That was my grand scheme. I do it almost every year. Like 3 years ago, I totally described this European prospect that the Suns were going to pull out of nowhere that was a cross between all the different European players and had a huge future, kind of like Sports Illustrated did all those years ago with that pitcher that no one had ever heard of, and put him on the front page of their magazine. And people totally fell for it, and they still talk about it to this day. But then I got an email from our overlord with SB Nation, Seth Pollock, who used to run Bright Side of the Sun back in the day. He sent me an email. He's like, you know what? There's nothing worse than totally believing somebody you trust and then being told that you got lied to, Dave. So maybe you should put April Fool's at the end of that article just to make sure that the most gullible people reading the article don't really fall for it. And I guess you're one of them, Tim.
Yep, I sure. Man, and as soon as I tweeted it out, I was like, damn it, Tim.
Wouldn't that have been great to take on the losers from the tournament who play older than the Phoenix Suns do?
Well, that's why it was so believable.
Yeah.
Can we give an update to mine from last week as well, Tim? Dave, I don't know if you saw this, but on Twitter, I think you did, I had announced that I was going to run the Lakers digital content platform. On the show, we made it very clear it was an April Fool's joke, and later in the day on Twitter I did. Through Monday, 3 days later, I was getting texts from people congratulating me on my new job. So it probably wasn't a good idea to do that, including my good friend Julie Fye at the Suns, Eddie Johnson, Doug Haller, the Suns beat writer. So I apologize to everyone that my joke actually was a little too believable. And so next year it'll be something completely outlandish.
So, you know, every group of friends has that one friend that they would be so happy for if that friend got a job and moved away half a country away. And if you don't think you have somebody like that in your group of friends, it's you.
And the fact that they'd want me to go work for the Lakers, that just tells you everything you need to know.
Damn it, Dave, I was just thinking to myself, there's nobody I out of all my friends I want to move away. And then the second you ended it with, it's you. Mailbag. And you are listening to the Sun Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast.
The production value is fantastic on this show. You don't get that anywhere else.
The best on this show.
Our favorite part of the show is mailbag, straight from you guys. Gag Perry 94 asks, what do you think Bender's numbers could look like next year after being healthy all summer and putting on more weight?
That Rick Perry's cousin, Gag Perry, or Matthew Perry's cousin. The names on Reddit are just truly impressive to me. They never leave me unsatisfied. But the numbers for Dragan, I don't know. But what I do know is anybody saying this guy is a bust is ridiculous. youngest guy in the NBA, hardly played. When you get to see him on the court, he shows flashes. Last night, he had an amazing spin move when he took it to the hoop. I think the future for this kid is very bright. He will put on muscle. He'll come out. He'll have a better year next year, and he'll continue to build. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah, you know, John Bloom approached me the other day and said, "How come you are the only one I've ever heard call him Dragan?" I don't know why I call him Dragan. For some reason, I have a weird way of saying his name, and I usually take pronunciations quite seriously. So I apologize, Dragan. No, I'm not going to roll my R like Doug on Arizona Sports does, but I'm certainly going to start trying to say Dragan. I think he's got a really bright future, but I see him, his bright future being as an all-around guy. If he does top out, I think a 15 to 18 points, 5 assists, 5 to 10 rebounds guy, like, who can play defense against any position on the court at any point in the game. So kind of like I was going to say his name and then it totally slipped my mind. The guy in Utah all those years, who was a 5x5 guy almost every night. He can get 5 blocks, 5 assists, 5. Oh, it's totally escaping my mind. Can we start this over again?
Well, we can, but I can tell you that the quad nickel is possibly the most impressive stat in the NBA. And there used to be an organization that tracked it throughout the course of a season, but they stopped last year. And by an organization, I mean some dude with a website. But he stopped last year, and it really bummed me out because the quad nickel is such an impressive stat.
Was the quad nickel Andre Kirilenko?
Yes. Gosh darn it.
Thank you.
I kept getting Andre Iguodala in my head, and I know that's not right. Yes, Kirilenko. I've been kind of comparing Dragan to Andre Kirilenko for years. Kirilenko realized his potential, and I'm not quite sure that, you know, Dragan obviously has to prove it as the youngest guy in the NBA, but he can be that kind of player where your team really wants him on the floor, your coach really wants him on the floor 40 minutes a night. He's not going to lead your team in any one category, but he'll lead you in the quad five or quad four kind of category on a nightly basis.
A real Moonson asks, with Booker being the clear centerpiece of this team, how obligated is management to keep guys like Ulis or Sauce around him?
If he likes those guys and you can keep them for the cheap, you keep them around as long as you can. Because the key, and I hate saying this because I don't like to pander to players, but the key is keeping Devin Booker happy and proving to him that you're trying to build a winner in the long term. Because the worst thing that could happen, the thing that would set the Suns back the most, is if he decided when this rookie contract's up to leave and leave extra money on the table. So if those guys make him happy, and I think they make this team a better team by keeping him around, you do it as long as it's not cost prohibitive.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to worry about Devin Booker leaving yet. I think if you're that kind of, you know, if you're going to worry about that in his second year, then you're worrying about the wrong things. We should just assume that Devin Booker is going to take the most money possible and he's going to build the winner in Phoenix. He already has that winning mentality himself. He's going to want to be the guy who brings the winner to Phoenix. So I'm just assuming he's going to spend his career here, unless the Suns do let him go at some point where he's an unrestricted free agent. But that, you're talking 9-10 years into his career. So
have you been a Suns fan for very long? If you don't think like that, you haven't been a Suns fan.
No, I
shudder at the thought of anything that possibly could go wrong with this team.
No, I get it. And there's people who are going to listen to this podcast and say, "Dave, you're such a, you know, you're not worrying about the right things." I'm not going to worry about it. I think Booker's around for the long haul. But you're right, Greg, keep him happy. Keep Tyler Ulis on the team. Anybody he thinks is really helpful to the team, keep them and build around Devin Booker. And the best thing you can do is put pieces that make Devin Booker better around him.
At Damney asks, what do we do at the center position once Chandler's contract ends? And then the follow-up question, and he calls this the fun one, which Suns player currently on the roster
So therefore, PJ Tucker is not included, or would survive longest in a Walking Dead scenario, and why?
All right. The center position, I don't think you have the answer yet. You got to find a young guy that can grow with this team. But we talked about it a little bit last week. The center position isn't what it used to be. You can find, and you may have on the roster, your stretch five. Marquise Chris may wind up being your center of the future with Bender at a power forward spot. You don't know, but you have to find a young solution. In a Walking Dead scenario, who would I want? I don't know. Devin Booker has shown that if you piss him off, he's going to rip your throat out. So I think that's probably the guy I go for right now.
Yeah, that's a good one. I was going to say Devin Booker as well. I'm not a big Walking Dead fan, but I can imagine that you need somebody who's got a killer instinct, and Devin Booker is the one on the team that could do that. I would say Tyler Ulis as well. I think he's just low-key because he smiles a lot more, and everyone thinks he's so cute because he's so small, but I think he's got a killer instinct as well. He really came back well this week against some of the best point guards in the league when – after the first quarter, when he was being bullied around and run through picks and all that. He's put up some really good stats this week and shown that he is a good player at any size. And so I do think he's got that killer instinct.
Actually, I take it back. I go with Brandon Knight, because if there's one guy that has acted like a zombie this season, it's that guy. He could sleepwalk around with all of them. Nobody'd ever notice that he wasn't one of the zombies. I'm going Brandon Knight.
That is hard to argue with. I would have said Ronnie Price personally, because I think he's got that killer instinct behind him. But the Brandon Knight argument, that is a valid one. Thunder Bob Majerle, if I'm pronouncing your name right, I hope so.
It's Marley. It's Thunder Bob Marley.
Marley? Is that how?
Oh. If you could see Tim's face right now, oh man, you guys would love it. You can cut that out, Tim, if you want, but it's Thunder Bob Marley. You just won the Majuro Hustle Award for the show, Tim. Congratulations.
We're gonna start calling it the Majuro Hustle Award.
Why is Marley spelled M-A-J-E-R-L-E?
I don't know.
It's too late to ask that question, man. Come on.
Thunder Bob Majerle.
My weekend.
Thunder Bob Majerle asks, what is the current population of Lynn Island?
The population of Lynn Island is about as many as still call him Dan Majuro. I think it's one, and I think it's Alex Lynn right now, and even his faith on that island is wavering. It is a very small island right now, and it's getting smaller by the minute, and it's running out of water too. I don't think anybody in Phoenix is believing in it. Maybe that population expands in his next team, but I think we're about at the end of the Alex Lynn era in Phoenix.
They're all taking the Majuro boat to the other islands.
Man, you guys are brutal. Do you know how hard it is to sit here and pronounce names all day? And in all seriousness, pronouncing names is the hardest part of working in radio, in my opinion.
I'm surprised you don't call our co-host Greg Esposito.
Look, Tim, I have the utmost respect for what you're saying. I was a PA announcer in college at the University of Arizona, and I had to say the name Ursula Tuastagi, and it's not spelled anything like that. So I totally get your feeling. And I had a coach actually come up to the booth at halftime of a women's soccer college game and yell at me for mispronouncing a player's name. So I totally get your feeling, but it does not make what you said any less funny.
Hey, Tim, I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself. Are you ready?
Yes.
Can you name the starting point guard on the 2013-14 – or no, sorry, the starting point guard on the 2012-13 Phoenix Suns who moved to dual point guard in 2013-14?
Wait, I'm sorry. Which year, Suns?
The white Slovenian point guard. That
Goran Dragic.
Before... What?
Goran Dragic.
All right. If you can say his name correctly, we'll give you a little bit of a break on Dan Majerle.
Okay. Well, I won up that, and I want both of you guys to correctly pronounce, and I know how to do it, and I'll give it at the end, the Greek freak, his full name.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Damn it. I was really hoping to win that. I've been so lazy.
Hey, how about everybody pronounce the French point guard's nickname that's in this 2017 draft?
Oh. That's hard.
Nobody's even trying.
No.
If they draft him, I'll learn it. Otherwise, I'm not wasting my time.
Last one. Tom Kidd 88 asks, do you think with the transition to Nike this offseason we'll see any franchise changes, a.k.a. jersey, courts, that kind of thing?
I'm going to plead the fifth on this one.
Read into it
what you will.
I'm not going to plead the fifth. I am going to plead ignorance, complete ignorance. But I have heard that the Suns are getting Nike jerseys and that there is some changes to them, but I have no clue what those changes are.
I may or may not know more than I'm willing to say at this time. That's where I'll leave you at. So, like I said, read into that as you will.
Will Suns fans be happy with the stuff that you're pleading the fifth on?
I may or may not be happy myself. I'll have more for you guys on this over the summer, and we'll get into it. But I'm not gonna piss off any of the basketball gods right now. But we'll get into it. I promise. There'll be stuff coming.
I'm going to make a prediction. When any changes, if there are changes, are announced, exactly half the people will think it's the worst uniform ever invented for the Phoenix Suns. 20% of the people will think it's a big improvement, and 30% of the people will go, eh, why'd they even bother? And then about a year later, those numbers are going to flip.
I completely agree. That's how it always happens. I will give one tidbit. Sleeves are dead.
Oh, man.
Yay.
I like the sleeves.
A dead silence.
He's the only one on Majuro Island right now with the sleeves. So.
Well, here's the thing. So,
The
Pelicans, Mardi Gras jerseys, the yellow and blue, the sleeve ones, God, those things were so goddamn sexy.
Oh, you and I have different definitions of sexy. Let's say that.
Greg, if you still have connections with the Suns and you can get anything done, what would be really awesome is if you get an orange sleeve jersey for Tim with Dan Majuro spelled phonetically on the back.
I can make the orange sleeve jersey. In the prize closet, I'm sitting on a bunch of orange sleeve jerseys. So at least make that happen. I actually have a Seth Curry and a Danny Granger game. Game used is a very loose term, but orange sleeve jerseys in the prize closet right now.
Are they're actually game jerseys? So
they are.
But the Danny Granger one still smells fresh right out of the laundry, right?
Exactly. Not one bead of sweat on that bad boy.
Well, maybe we could just tape some, some new lettering back that's Majurle or something like that. How would that go phonetically?
Tim's never speaking to us again, which is a bad thing when he's the host of your podcast.
You know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, Bob Marley. M-A-R-L-E-Y, right?
What does that have to do with anything?
Because the Marley, I'm thinking of how Bob Marley was spelled.
We're just giving you a hard time. So Tim,
it wasn't Majurle.
All this Majurle stuff, we probably only have 15 minutes of content left.
Oh, no, this podcast's done, and we're just spinning the wheels at this point.
You're going to cut it off right before the Maduro thing, and it'll be like 20 minutes of content.
That's why it's dangerous when you let him edit this bad boy, because he's going to cut out all his flaws. Ours are going to be there. All of our mistakes will stay in. So,
no, I cut out usually if we talk over each other. If we use a lot of ums, like I just did, I cut that out. Apart from that, though, for the most part, I keep, I keep everything in. I think there's value in what makes a podcast so special, I think, is the honest product that you're getting at the end of it, as opposed to other forms of broadcast, which are highly edited.
I agree.
And that wraps up this episode of the Solar Panel, Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Radio. You can follow us individually anytime you want. You can follow Greg, because apparently he prefers his actual name, at Espo. You can follow Dave King at Dave King NBA. You can follow myself at Radio Tim NBA. You can find us on Facebook at Suns Solar Panel. But the best way to follow us is by far Twitter, because that's one we use the most, at Suns Solar Panel as well. That was it? Nothing?
I got nothing.
I got nothing.